Hi.
This is Take Charge Your Health with Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist.
Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye.
Welcome back, welcome back. Today, I'm with my co-host,
Carol Peterson.
And what we're going to do today is we're going to go to the forefront. We're going to be looking into the pioneers of therapies and how they apply to us now as they're developing in the office, in clinics, and what they can do for us or potentially can do for us. And here to explain, so we're going to start with literally baby questions, because we're going to build ourselves up into an understanding. So we'll have enough knowledge so we can ask the right questions. How does that sound, Carol?
Hopefully, yes. I think there's some murky parts of this for me.
I think there are murky parts in this for all of us, because we're all learning and growing together. Together is the fun part. So today we're speaking with Michael, one of the vice presidents of Biogenics. He is a pharmacist and been working with stem cells and exosomes and PRP for many years. I'll ask him how many. And he's here to give us a basic understanding. This is the beginning of multiple talks. So this, we're starting at the basics, the kindergarten phase of what we're dealing with, so we can begin to understand. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you. How are you? Thank you for having me.
We're terrific, absolutely terrific, and curious, because there's so much hype here and so much promise, and the promise is real. But what is promise and what is real? We don't know. So we asked you here to help us kind of sort through some of this like a laser and go through some information and give us enough information, as I said, so we can ask the appropriate questions and see if this applies to us at this time. So let's begin with what everybody is talking about. And Carol, if you want to add something, I'm leaving it open for you. But what everybody is talking about are stem cells. Everybody's talking about it. We see pictures in magazines on the airplanes, come down, take one shot, and you see this guy, fat, weak, no muscles, coming out like a bodybuilder and with one shot. So is that real, or what are stem cells? Can they benefit us to that degree?
Stem cells, the term stem cells is a generic term for a product not only contains stem cells, but contains growth factors, cytokines, hyaluronic acid, other biologics, all that have a clinical outcome when we inject this product into a joint, into a muscle, into a nerve area. So you have cellular differentiation with this product, and the product undergoes mitosis, it duplicates, and as time goes on, 2 or 3 months, we start to see an improvement. For example, if we're injecting cells, quote-unquote stem cells, into a knee, you're going to have cellular differentiation, you're going to have the cytokines and growth factors all working together to promote tissue growth, promote healing, and to correct what caused the original degeneration in that knee. So it's going to regenerate that knee, and it's going to reduce inflammation. It's going to have cellular differentiation at the same time. And we have a great success rate treating patients with bad knees, hips, shoulders, usually with one single injection of a product that does contain stem cells, cytokines, growth factors, hyaluronic acid, a product used to be called exosomes, now called decellularized nanoparticles.
Michael, before we get to that, can I interject a question? Because we see stem cells in other places. I just bought a product that claims to have stem cells from fertilized egg. There's cosmetics that claim to have plant stem cells. There was very popular therapy from fetal animals, and is that not all stem cells? Are we talking here only about human stem cells or the whole world of stem cells?
Just human stem cells. I'm not familiar with plant-based stem cells or stem cells from animals. The products I'm familiar with are from the umbilical cord. They're umbilical cord-derived stem cells that when there's a natural childbirth and you have an umbilical cord, we extract the cord blood and the Wharton's jelly, which is the tissue from the umbilical cord. You can also get stem cells from adipose tissue, which is your fat. You can also get stem cells from your own body, from your bone marrow. But those are painful procedures. The cells get larger and slower as you age. They're exposed to environmental issues like smoke and sunlight. They're not as effective or potent as day one cells from the umbilical cord. That those are the products that I've been working with for the last 6 years.
Okay, so just for our audience, where do you get the umbilical cords to get the stem cells from?
Well, there's a screening process where we screen mother to see if she has any medications she's taking, any health issues. So there's a lengthy screening process, and then the mother would donate the umbilical cord to science. And then we take that umbilical cord and we process it to obtain the cord blood and the Wharton's jelly, which is the tissue, to get our stem cells. So these type of cells...
Are these made in the United States or all over, or where are they sourced?
I'm only familiar with the ones we use from a hospitals in California. So All the products that we're discussing are produced right here in the United States. They have an FDA license, an FDA certificate for manufacturing and distribution of this product. So you could get cells, stem cells from other countries, but there's no FDA in Mexico or Costa Rica or Guatemala. However, there's an FDA here in the United States, and this is where you want government to be involved in your health care, because the FDA will regulate the manufacturing and distribution of the product, and will give a license for the company to be able to manufacture, harvest, and distribute these products. So there is a government oversight, which is critical, because you don't want to have something done without a third party overseeing the entire process to make sure everything is perfect. And that's what we have here in the United States, and our products are FDA licensed.
That's a very important point, because you might be getting something from a lot of stem cells used to be from Russia or from China, and they're not being supervised. The health of the individual where they're extracted, it's not being supervised. So you really don't know what you're getting. Whereas here, when you're getting American stem cells, you're getting a regulated purification process. That's more able to be trusted. Now, stem cells, we're going back to kindergarten here. Why do we have stem cells, and what do stem cells do in our body?
Well, we all have stem cells. If you notice, a child that gets injured recovers much quicker than an elderly person, because they have less stem cells as we age. Stem cells helps the body heal. They're building blocks for healing and regenerating the body. So what we're doing is we're taking a product and injecting these cells into a damaged area. Usually a damaged area will give off a signal called a paracrine signal, which will attract the stem cells, and they will hone into that damaged area, sit there, dock, duplicate, and you're going to have cellular differentiation along with the abundance of other biologics for a clinical outcome like cytokines, growth factors, hyaluronic acid, decellularized nanoparticles. These additional biologics will all be honed into that damaged area to regenerate that damaged area, whether it's a muscle tear, whether it's a cartilage damage, or if it's bone-on-bone issue for a knee, or a rotator cuff issue, or a muscle tear, these injuries will do quite well with one single injection of a biologics that contain all those components that I previously discussed.
In my office, I've used stem cells, and on two levels, one locally into the joint. And I've had some quite, well, surprisingly positive effects with these types of injections where someone who isn't walking well because of the pain in their knee continues to walk well, literally feels the difference immediately, getting off the table. The pain goes away. And then literally didn't need another shot for another 2 years. And that's the Paraquin effect, the localized effect. But if it's done IV, are you still getting a Paraquin effect that you're speaking about, an effect that goes directly to damaged tissue to repair it?
Yes, you would have the same effects whether it was given IV or local. But local is really the application that we really focus on if we're treating joints, neuropathy, plantar fasciitis, and even aesthetics, face, hair growth. Using a local injection and to have the product delivered right to that specific area seems to have the best results that I've seen anecdotally and also with hundreds of doctors I've been working with for the last 6 years.
Okay, Michael, I have a question. I've heard that stem cells may not work as well if your health status is really impaired. Or maybe a corollary to that, are there things that people who want stem cell therapy, are there things they should avoid doing? Are there things that they can enhance the effect of the stem cells while they're doing these injections?
Typically what I do, we do a functional blood test to see if the body has any deficiencies in vitamins. If the patient does have a deficiency in vitamins, we do an IV drip of either vitamin C, B-complex, glutathione. There's other IV vitamins that you can use to help the immune system and keep the patient in the best possibility to have the best clinical effect. On the same token, you want to have a patient not smoking. Any type of smoke affects the stem cells. Drinking alcohol, having a diet that's high in gluten or a lot of carbohydrates. These little areas that we try to talk to the patient about will have their body best respond to stem cells. But the main thing we try to do is to see if there's a deficiency in vitamins. And we would treat the patient with IV vitamins if there was a big deficiency so that they can have the best clinical outcome.
Once you have a stem cell injection, say your knee, is it better to rest the knee to let it repair? Or as Corinne was saying, she's had experience with people, all of a sudden after the injection, their pain is relieved. So now with their pain relieved, they want to do things. Which way do you recommend? Should some caution be done after a stem cell treatment to allow the body to heal, or is that not necessary?
Well, unlike having surgery, having a knee replacement, where you're going to have downtime for many months, and you're going to need physical therapy, rehabilitation, which is also costly. When you use injection stem cells, you can resume your normal activities the next day, go shopping, go to work, go to school. I tell patients not to have a heavy load on the knees. If we're injecting a knee, not to go bike riding or jogging for the first 2-3 weeks. After that, you can gradually increase the load on the knee. But usually for 2 or 3 weeks, just walking is fine. Stretching even helps the cells work well. So just take it easy, normal activities. Don't go running or bike riding for 2 or 3 weeks. And after 2 or 3 weeks, you can gradually begin to put more pressure on the knee. But initially, just resume normal activities. You can go to work the next day after your injection of this product. You don't feel anything as far as preventing you from moving. And Corinne was right saying that you're going to have immediate effect of pain leaving that area. What happens is it regulates the C1, T2 helper cells to reduce inflammation. It regulates the pro-inflammation and the anti-inflammation so that a reduction of inflammation will be experienced within the first couple of days, if not first couple of weeks. And that alone really helps with pain. A lot of times the pain is due to inflammation, and this product has a tremendous anti-inflammatory response to the area where it's injected.
Now, I did a little research before we did this talk because I must admit I needed to be able to ask questions and to focus the question so we could have an intelligent conversation, which hopefully that's what we're giving the audience right now. But they talked about three stages with stem cells, how they work in their length of time. And the first stage they talk about is what I spoke about, is this fast, immediate reduction in inflammation. So you literally are on the table and you go, what's happening? All that pain is gone. And you move your leg and or your hip or your shoulder or your joint, and it's like it disappeared. And you're going, how could it be like that? Well, it just literally stops inflammation. And then, and that will last a few months. And then rebuilding of tissue. Second stage is to rebuild the tissue, regrow it, to strengthen it, to build cartilage. That starts immediately, but you see the effects within 2 months. So here you had a treatment 2 months ago, but the effects of the rebuilding of the tissue begins in 2 months. And then there is what they call the third stage is a genetic modification. And it literally reprograms the DNA to make healthy cells again and repair the cells into healthier cells. And that can last months to years. And it literally also, as I was reading, can increase the mitochondria. So you literally have more energy in the cells. Those are our energy cells, more energy in the cell to continue the healing process for months, depending on up to years. And one of the things that I tell my patients when they get an injection, do not take anti-inflammatories for the first 2 months. You can block the action of these very delicate yet very powerful cells. Now, correct me if I was wrong in that statement, Michael, please.
Much of what you said is valid. As far as avoiding anti-inflammatories, I typically tell patients and my doctors 1 week before, 2 weeks after is sufficient, but even an extra month is fine, because you don't want to block the anti-inflammatory properties. What you said is true. So if a patient has acute pain, I tell them to take Tylenol, which is acetaminophen. But we try to tell the patients to avoid the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. As far as DNA, an undifferentiated stem cell has no DNA instruction. So I don't think at all will affect the DNA in any remote form. What it will do is have cellular differentiation and to turn into the needed cells to help that area. And once again, through that paracrine signaling. But DNA is not affected with this product. Like I said, the undifferentiated stem cell has no DNA instructions. So the DNA is not going to be affected with this product. I have studied this situation, and there's no DNA information that's going to be given from this product. However, it will signal other cells in the body to come and have a biological effect to that particular area. That's where the cytokines come into play. The cytokines work as a cell signaler, and it's going to signal other biologics, other cells, to come to that damaged area to have a clinical effect to help with the healing process. So as I mentioned early on in this discussion, we're not relying on the clinical outcome just on the stem cells. We're relying on the effect of the cytokines, growth factors, decellularized nanoparticles, decellularized micropods, hyaluronic acid. You have all these biologics that are working in combination when we're injecting this stem cell product into a damaged area. And typically we see a full clinical outcome in 3 to 4 months. You're going to have a reduction of inflammation initially, as you did mention. And that alone many times helps a patient that's having knee pain or shoulder pain.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we see great outcomes for joints. I believe in the product. I see the clinical outcomes. I hear the response from my physicians. I talk to the patients afterwards. And it's a safe product. It's a natural product. It doesn't cause any side effects. Maybe sometimes 1% of the patients have a local irritation to the area. But it's a well-tolerated product. We treated patients very young to patients that are 100 years old. Everybody responds favorably.
Awesome. I have a question. If I could hone in on just a particular patient. So my friend has osteoarthritis. He said he's going in for surgery later this month. He's tried everything. I don't know if he's tried stem cells. But he's experiencing bony fusions, but they're going to also fuse more of his sacral spine in an attempt to relieve pain, which is so intense, he's forced to use morphine, and even that doesn't touch it. So you have this is a more generalized disease process, is it not, osteoarthritis? So what would stem cells be good application for that, or are there limitations? Should I intercede here and say, you know, maybe you haven't tried this, there's a promise here. Where would you go with that?
Osteoarthritis does really well with stem cell injections. The thing is, if you have surgery, say you have surgery on your knee or your shoulder, or you have your knee surgically repaired, if you do that first, then the stem cells will have zero effect. But you can have stem cells first, then have surgery. So if your patient is contemplating surgery and having a surgical procedure, he may be better off having stem cells initially, and then if there's a treatment failure for whatever reason, then resort to surgery. I think once we get the body repaired surgically, there's less of the product of stem cells, quote-unquote stem cells, to have an effect in that area. So I typically tell patients and tell the doctors I work with, have the patient, if they're going to try stem cells prior to surgery. And then if there's a treatment failure for whatever reason, then you can opt for having surgery at that point. But,
you know,
osteoarthritis, you know, is a disease state where stem cells really, really do a great job.
Now, there's something else. I think there's a piece missing in the story, Carol. It's not your fault, but I'm just going to bring this up. It doesn't sound like just straight osteoarthritis. It sounds more like ankylosing spondylitis.
Because that does fit, doesn't it?
Pardon?
The fusion's already going.
Yeah, whereas osteoarthritis, the manifestation would be a weak bone, and the bone would literally be collapsing on itself. I have patients that when I met them, they were 5'5", 5'6", and now they're like 5'1", or 5'2". That's osteoarthritis, where it's shrinking, but it's not fusing. The bone is not fusing. Like Peyronie's disease. Peyronie's disease is a calcification in soft tissue manifesting in a male's penis, but ankylosing spondylitis is the calcification manifesting in the spinal area. Now, what we're dealing with there in both of these cases, we're dealing with autoimmune disease. And stem cells shine in autoimmune disease in bringing down the inflammation and literally blocking the progression of the problem. And in some cases, over time, reducing the damage that's already been caused. So you're literally slowly, not instantly, turning back the clock. Michael, what do you think about that?
Well, I think stem cells have a tremendous capability to modulate the immune system. The immunomodulatory effects of stem cells are quite significant. So we typically see the immune system being boosted with stem cells. And there is a lot of clinical studies and white papers discussing stem cells to be used for autoimmune diseases to help with the immune system. That's typical to have that response with stem cells. But typically the use of stem cells will be just used for local injections. But there are studies and there's a lot of information about using the product for to modulate the immune system for different various autoimmune diseases.
I have a question. I've heard some advertising from various companies, and one of the advertising points is like numbers of stem cells per injection. Is that a significant thing to look at or not?
Well, the FDA now has new regulations. They don't want companies to count the cells, the stem cells, and publish it. They also believe that the use of these products shouldn't rely solely on the therapeutic outcome of just the stem cells. We're looking at treating locally different types of like joint injuries. And the therapy is not only based on the stem cells, it's based on all the biologics in the product. As I mentioned, you're going to have a clinical response not solely based on the stem cells, but based on everything else that's included in this injection, which includes cytokines, growth factors, decellularized micropods, hyaluronic acid, and other biologics. They all work synergistically together to have a healing process. And we're not just relying on stem cells for that therapeutic outcome, even though the term stem cells encompasses all those other biologics that I just mentioned. Even the word stem cells now is frowned upon by the FDA. They don't want the clinical outcome to be based on quote-unquote stem cells. So companies are now promoting the product based on all the biologics in that product for a clinical outcome.
Okay. Is there any difference if you have stem cells derived from boy babies or girl babies?
I never heard of such a thing. So yeah, I don't think it matters. Yeah, I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters at all. That's something that's the first time I ever heard that before. However, if you're comparing
Carol comes up with unique questions
to adipose fat stem cells and bone marrow stem cells, there's a big difference between those areas. As far as boy or girl, that's the first I heard of that. Very good.
good question, Carol.
Yes.
Michael, I have two questions, and one has come up, and the other one is literally, I want to change the subject. So the first question is that I spoke with my brother on the West Coast. He was told by his doctor that stem cells are illegal. And then I talked with a doctor in Jersey who also said that stem cells are illegal. Can you help us out on that? Because that's not my knowledge or understanding.
It's not my understanding either. The FDA gives us licenses to manufacture and distribute these products. They're not illegal. They're FDA licensed, FDA certified laboratories that produce the product. Now, a physician can practice medicine any way they see fit. The FDA doesn't regulate how a physician practices medicine. A physician can use these products. It's not illegal. These are licensed by the FDA laboratories. So I think maybe those physicians who are saying stem cells are illegal don't have the full story. Maybe I don't know why they would even come to that conclusion, because these products are out there. They're being utilized on a daily basis from laboratories that are FDA licensed, FDA certified.
Maybe they came to that conclusion by the fact that so many. One day there was no stem cells available, and the next day there were 25 companies calling my office every day to sell stem cells. Maybe they came to that conclusion because many of those upstarts have been closed down because they couldn't certify their process. And whereas your company's Biogenics has been at it for years and have a certified FDA-approved process. So maybe that's where this came from, the fact that the labs they were dealing with were closed down.
Could be. That makes good sense. the company that I work for has been around for 5 years. We have a contract with the federal government in 157 VA hospitals to have the product available for our veterans and government agencies. So this product has been used on a government level. We have licenses by the FDA. So, you know, the reason maybe some of those doctors feel is because some of the other companies they may have dealt with are not in business any longer for whatever reason.
Now, the subject change is that we've been talking about stem cells. But now there is a product that people have some kind of understanding of stem cells, but nobody understands exosomes. What is an exosome, and why should I be interested in it, and what can it do for my health? That's a big question.
Well, an exosome is really part of a stem cell. An exosome is 300 times smaller than a stem cell. It'll penetrate the blood-brain barrier. It's a cell signaling type of product. It'll signal other cells to have a biological response and help with a clinical outcome. So a cytokine is a very small nanoparticle, sometimes called a micropod. It's a decellularized product, and it works as a cell signaler, where it's going to signal other biologics in the body that come to that area for a clinical outcome. So it's similar. You know, stem cells have exosomes, but this is a concentration of exosomes, and it's basically a cell signaler.
Yeah, because it's created by stem cells. It's like it's excreted as a messenger from the stem cell to the target cell. So it's like an RNA, and it moves sometimes through tubules to create the effect on the target cell, on the damaged cell. But what I also understand is exosomes are used specifically for inflammation. They're just amazing in terms of bringing down inflammation. Is that correct, or help me out on that one, Michael?
Yeah, the exosomes will help with inflammation. It's going to signal, the exosomes will help with inflammation. The pro-inflammation and the anti-inflammation receptors, the T1, T2 helper cells, will be regulated to a point by cell signaling by the exosomes. The exosomes will signal whether to reduce or to help with the pro and anti-inflammation in the body. So we're seeing anti-inflammatory results using exosomes to treat different injuries. So it will regulate the inflammation nicely also in any part of the body.
I've also heard of a product that claims to have no stem cells, no cells of any type, but they're Wharton's jelly.
Wharton's jelly is derived from the umbilical cord. It's called Wharton's jelly tissue. And oftentimes, just injecting the Wharton's jelly, which is the jelly part of the umbilical cord, has an abundance of mesenchymal stem cells that's going to help with the healing process. So you're talking about a product that is just from the tissue, the Wharton's jelly tissue, not utilizing the cord blood, and that has an abundance of MSCs, sometimes called mesenchymal stem cells or medicinal signaling cells.
Okay.
So the Wharton's jelly does have an abundance of MSCs, which is the type of cells needed for regeneration.
Wow. So I really want to thank you for opening up this conversation with us and with our audience. I know you have to go. You have an appointment. I appreciate you taking this time, and we definitely want you back so we can understand more. So, Michael, thank you so much. I know this has been challenging, to say the least, but it's been so informative for myself, and I know for the audience, because this is such a new subject.
It was my pleasure to speak to you guys about regeneration, about cell therapy. Anytime you like me to come back on, just let me know. I'm always available to see if I can provide some information and some clarification, and to offer any type of new information for yourselves and also for the audience. So okay, I'm honored to speak to you today.
One quick question. Is the pricing on using stem cell therapies astronomical and out of reach for people, or can people actually afford this?
It's very affordable, especially if we're treating using different products from these companies. If you have a knee surgery, for example, the cost of rehabilitation alone will exceed the cost of stem cells. This product is not out of reach. It's affordable. And more importantly, there's no downtime. There's no scarring. It doesn't affect your life. You can go back to work the next day. And it's not out of reach for 99% of patients listening to this program. It's affordable. And there's other companies that sometimes we do business with that help finance the cells for the patient, where they can pay over 14 months at zero interest. There's all kind of programs, but even if it's paying up front for the product is affordable as far as looking at other types of treatments for knees, hips, shoulders, plantar fasciitis, very affordable.
There's something else is that many multiple insurance companies are now paying, and even Medicare is paying, depending on the diagnosis. I have a patient that came in this week, and she's getting stem cells into her joints up at Montefiore Hospital, and it's being paid for by Medicare. So it's a pretty it's coming into our daily lives and daily treatment programs. And it's really exciting to watch the changes and the improvement.
But mostly it is a cash product. Medicare, private insurance seldomly pays for it. There must be an exception to why this patient's getting it paid for. But you can certainly have finance companies help finance the initial cost. But for the majority, I'm seeing that the private insurances and Medicare does not pay for it. But I'm sure there's exceptions. And Medicare will pay for some amniotic products. That's a whole other discussion we can have for next time, where Medicare will pay for an amniotic product, but only certain types of amniotic products and certain companies. That's a whole other hour chat, and we can certainly talk about that next time.
Okay.
Thank you again, Michael, and thanks.
My pleasure.
For working with us and working through some of our sound problems.
My pleasure. I'm always available. Thanks for the opportunity.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you.
So I'm so glad we had Michael on, and, you know, he started a really interesting conversation about stem cells, about understanding them, about understanding their potential. But I want to continue the conversation, Carol. He had to go, but I want to continue. I've been using, now this is a different type of stem cell. It is weaker, and we're not really depending on the stem cell, although we attempt to activate it. I have a method where I activate the stem cells by washing them with ozone. So it stimulates them, gets them active. But I'm not depending on that. I'm depending a lot on the growth factors in our blood, which also are activated by the ozone. So what I'm talking about is PRP. And PRP, I'm getting some really...
Okay, tell people what PRP stands for.
Okay, it stands for platelet-rich plasma. So I will explain the process, and the results are just lovely. And just like everything, it's not 100%, but there's such a degree of response that we really need to pay attention to this therapy and see how it can expand our treatment protocols and where it works best. All of that is important. So PRP is platelet-rich plasma. So what do? I draw the patient's own blood. And that's why people like it so much, because there's nothing foreign there. I draw their blood, I spin it, and then I activate it with a mineral. So what I've done is, well, in some cases, when I'm doing it into a joint, I activate it with a mineral. And so I'm stimulating the platelets, the clotting factors, to begin to work faster. So I inject it into a joint area as a liquid, into a painful joint. And like we were talking about, it's amazing because the pain can, nothing is 100%, can go right away, immediately. It's like, how could this be? You injected an anti-inflammatory in me. No, I just injected your own blood. But as the PRP, the platelet-rich plasma that's been activated by ozone, sits in the joint because it's an enclosed capsule, it becomes like a gel. So many people are getting hyaluronic acid injection, right. Synvisc injection into joints. And what is it? That's a liquid that injected into a joint becomes a gel, and you have like a little cushion that you're walking on. Well, the same thing happens with PRP, but at the same time, you have growth factors, low-level stem cells, platelets. And what is happening is you're stimulating a healing process. You have a gel, you have a cushion, and you have this. It sits there as a cushion for 7 to 9 days maximum, and the body breaks it down and dissolves it. But by that time, the inflammation is down, and a healing process has already begun. I've had quite lovely results with PRP. I also use it on the face, and it literally regenerates tissue. So I use it aesthetically.
Isn't that called the vampire facial?
The vampire facial is it's a degree of that, but there's another piece of it that the true vampire facial has, is they use the synthetic fillers that go deep into the tissue, and then they use the PRP more superficially. I don't do that. I do the PRP deep on purpose because I want that lower tissue to regenerate and new cells. It stimulates a low-level circulation increase, which stimulates the healing of the cells. It's called a low-level angiogenesis. And then, guess what, Carol? I didn't expect this at all, but what I am seeing is I'm injecting it into the scalps of males. Now, totally bald males that have totally shiny bald males, it's too late. The PRP does not work. But when you have people that their hair is falling out and you can see a circle in the back of their head and thinning on the front, the results I'm getting are overall quite stunning and satisfying, and the patients are quite happy. I've seen statistics. They say that they have a 75% response rate and a 25% lack of response. I really haven't seen the 25%, but it's there. You know, statistically, they're seeing it. Go on, Carol.
I have two questions.
Yes.
Okay, first on the facial. If you're using PRP as you're using it, how long before it takes effect, noticeable effect? And then how long do you maintain these results?
Well, just like everything else, your skin is aging. So right. I'm going to explain it with my hands, but it's difficult for the audience to see this. So let me go a little slowly so I get the motion of my hands into my words. So the skin is aging at, let's say, I'm going to make a stupid comparison, 10 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you use the PRP and you get more circulation into the skin. You get a stimulation of a collagen creation in the skin. You get a reduction in dark marks on the face, if not a complete resolution. You get a reduction, if not a complete resolution, of the fine lines that are forming on the face, the crow's feet, the 11s, the nasal labial fold. You get a reduction there. And so literally you've brought the skin back 5 years, maybe 10 years, depending on the kind of response. But it's aging. But it's aging not at 10 miles an hour anymore. It's now aging at 3 miles an hour or 5 miles an hour, and the tissue is healthier. With older women, with women my age, you know, the young ones, I recommend 3 treatments. One a month, and then we evaluate it in 6 months and a year. And you do 1 treatment and then 1 treatment, because skin is aging. You don't want it not to be aging. When you use those synthetic silicone injections into your face, it's not aging. It's dissolving, but not aging. But the thing that's so remarkable with PRP that's so special is I can walk into a restaurant on the Upper West Side or anywhere out here, anywhere, and I can say, oh, this person had facial surgery, this person had laser, this, because the skin doesn't have a normal, natural look. It's pulled, it's tucked, it's become hard and fixed, which is what the PRP breaks up. And so what you have is this very soft, natural look that's lovely and increased circulation. So now you've literally restored youth back into the tissue. It's aging. Why? Because it's normal, healthy skin, but it's aging at a slower rate.
Now, what about the hair growth? Hair just doesn't pop out of your head magically. So what kind of time frame are you talking about to regrow hair? And you mentioned men, but this is a big problem for women. Those balding spots and thinning on the crown of the head is rampant. Are those people able to restore some of their hair with PRP as you're describing? And how long would it take? Is it maintained? What do you have to do to maintain it? Is it similar to what you just said about the face, or is it different? Those are not
questions. Is that a big enough question? Now I know how people feel when I'm asking them questions. So, yes, with women, it can be dramatic. I had a woman come in with one of those shruggy hats on. Really nice, smart woman who's selling real estate, so she's out in the public all the time. She took the hat off, and her hair was so fine and thin. I have pictures of her in my office. Was so fine and thin, she said, I'm embarrassed to go out. I'm embarrassed to meet people. It's interfering with my work. And so I'll tell you honestly, this was my first woman that I had ever worked on. So I said, listen, we'll see what we can do. And this is what I recommend, exactly the protocol that I told you. Once a month for a minimum of 3, with her level of hair loss, 4 times. And then we'll see each other in 6 months, and we'll see each other in a year. Okay, well, she did the 3, and I also give her supplements, and there's 2 supplements that I love. I'm not associated with either of them, but I see really good results with them. One is Regenimax by Zymogen, and the other one is Viviscal. And when you put those 2 together, you get tremendous hair support, at least with the majority of my patients. So I didn't see her again for quite a while. And then a year later, she came into my office and I almost didn't recognize her. And I have pictures of that also. Her hair, the balding spots had disappeared. Her hair was even. She was totally happy and healthy. Very healthy. She continues to take the orals. And I think she could use another treatment. She chose not to do it, and she continues to take the orals. And she said that the treatment that I gave her in the scalp dripped down her face into the facial tissue. And she said her eyes look better than ever. Her crow's feet disappeared. And because I was really working intensively on her. And she's quite pleased with the PRP treatment. So PRP can be dramatic. You said one thing about the facial that I didn't answer, and I'll answer it now. How long does it take to see a difference? Remember, when we're dealing with these, some of the first thing you see is inflammation reduction. Right. So you do a PRP treatment, and in 1 week, you see a difference. And then it continues working. So a month later, you see more of a difference, but it's a little bit, it's different. And I've had people send me pictures from 3 months after one treatment, and they and their skin is still getting better and better. At that point, at 3 months, you're not going to see much change. All of this is quite subtle, but profound. My friend or patient said that people keep coming up to her. She says, I don't see any difference. People keep coming up to her and telling her how beautiful her skin looks. One treatment. So you, she said, but I don't really see a difference. What I see, she's had a lot of, fillers. And what I see the difference is softer skin. It just looks softer and more beautiful.
Right. And as opposed to like the static faces people get with using something that paralyzes your skin like Botox.
Well, you'll know my character. Botox done badly paralyzes the face. Botox done correctly can make the face very soft and brighten the eyes and raise the eyebrows and make you look more alert. And I know how to do it correctly. Models don't like to come to me. Why? They want that stiff, hard look. They like those newscasters. You look at them and you go, oh my God, over Botoxed. Help us.
right. A smile, a frown.
Doesn't exist.
There's all the nuances of expression.
Yeah. If they drank coffee, it'd drip out the side of their mouths. Too stiff. A little bit too stiff. Sort of like Roxanne, when she did her facial and they did all the Botox and the fillers on her, she came back and she was doing her show and she wasn't funny in the same way that she was before, because so much of her humor depended on facial response. And she didn't have it anymore. She could not respond. You couldn't tell if she was laughing or crying any longer because they had made her so stiff. If you take a flat picture of her, attractive. But if you're living with a person like that or you're watching them, they have no expression. So, Carol, what do you think about all this stuff?
So exciting. There's so many possibilities, and I really enjoyed the first part of the show because I think for a great many people, stem cells seem unattainable. It seems like maybe it's just a big blown up ideologic thing, but I think Michael is very good in bringing it down to the practicality and what it actually is, what you can expect to see. All of this was helpful to me in communicating this to other people. So I think the take-home message is we have some really interesting therapies that are available and affordable.
Right now, but keep an eye out because the future is exploding. So thank you for being with us. It's always fun. I love being here and speaking to you directly. And thank you, Carol. Every time we're together, I learn every single time. And we'll be back next week. Give us a shout out on our Facebook page and tell us what you want to hear, what you want us to focus on.
In Charge of Your Health with Corinne and Carol on Facebook.
Yeah, give us a shout out because we do respond. Thank you very much, and we'll be back next week. Bye.
Bye.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me. Left Hook from Redding, California. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.